It was just so much fun making the tea together. And one of the guys there was Pastor Danielle. And Pastor Danielle was kind of teasing me this night in Mali. And he said, Mike, what are you going to preach about tomorrow? And I told him about my message. He said, now, where are you going to preach? I said, well, I'm going to preach in a little village about 35 miles from here. And he said, oh, no, not that village. And he got this real serious look on his face. He said, if it rains tonight, don't go. I said, what do you mean, don't go? I went to France, studied French, came here to Mali to learn Jula, and you're telling me not to go? He said, listen, Mike, if it rains tonight, don't go. Well, I couldn't understand why Pastor Danielle would tell me that, but I figured, well, he knows what he's talking about. He's a Mali, and he's preached here for many years as a pastor, and now as a dean of students at the Bible Institute, so I'll take his word. But that night, on my way home from church, I was a little bit nervous on my way home from a tea party. I was a little nervous because I looked off to the north and I saw some lightning off to the north and I thought, I'm in trouble. It's going to rain tonight up there. And I kind of had a flashback of my first rainstorm in Mali. We were laying in bed and all of a sudden, around our bed, we woke up to the explosions of like bombs around our bed, around our house. Kaboom! Kaboom! Everywhere we looked, it was exploding. There was no rain, just this exploding, exploding. I was so afraid, and Sue was awake, and we were laying there in bed trembling, and then we realized there was this huge wind blowing through our house. And I thought, what is that? I must have left the windows open. So I went to close these windows to our house, and fought against the wind, and got to our living room, and the windows were closed, but the curtains were sticking straight out from the wall. I thought, what in the world? The wind's blowing so hard. And then I looked over to the door of the house, and the door of the house had these little slots in it. Let me go back and show you the door. And the door had these little slots in it so that the house wouldn't be so hot to let a little breeze through. And so the wind was also blowing through there. Well, I was making my way back to the bedroom. I looked into John's room. John was still fast asleep. And I thought, how can he sleep through this storm? And I remember the next morning I asked him, I said, John, how did you sleep through that storm last night? And he said, Daddy, when I'm sleeping, my ears don't work. And I wish my ears weren't working. I was so afraid. I told Sue, I said, this is too dangerous. I can't sleep here. How could anybody live here? It's just too dangerous. And as I lay there, I looked up at the roof, and I realized the way they mounted the roof, they used these steel trusses, and they bolted the tin roof onto those steel trusses, and down from the steel trusses, they hung these iron things, and then they set these 1-foot square or 3-foot square pieces of plywood in there, and as I laid up there looking at that, I realized I was sleeping in a toaster. If lightning hit that roof, we would have been toasted in our bed. John would have been toasted in his sleep. I told Sue, this isn't right. It's too dangerous living in Africa. I don't think it's right to live in a place that's this dangerous. And my wife, I don't know if you can identify with me, but she's my favorite preacher. She reads the great devotionals of history, and she always has the best things to teach me when I need them most. And Mike, she looks over to me in the bed there, and she says, Mike, obedience isn't always easy, but it's always wise. And I really didn't need to hear that right there. You know, I was terrified of the storm, but my wife was right, and it's true. Obedience isn't always easy, but it's always wise. And now, as I think back on that memory, I think about Jesus when he was sleeping in that boat. Remember when he was sleeping in the boat? The disciples were all terrified, just like I was terrified. And what did the disciples say when Jesus calmed the storm? What kind of man is this that even the wind and the sea obey Jesus? Even the disciples were amazed at Jesus' power. Well, if the winds and the sea can obey Jesus, I guess I should obey Jesus and stay here in Mali and be a missionary. So I wondered that night as I went to bed, remembering that rainstorm. And the next morning when we woke up, I told Sue, I said, well, hon, it's a nice day today, but I'm sure it rained, and I'm going to have to go tell Jane we can't go to that village. And so I got in the truck, and I drove down to town where Jane lived, and as I pulled into the mission compound where Jane lived, she was already out there waiting for me on the street. And I got out of the car real quick before she got in. I said, Jane, we can't go. Pastor Danielle told me if it rains north of here, not to build that village. It's too dangerous. The road is too bad. And she said, oh, Mike, don't listen to Pastor Danielle. What does he know? All he has is a little moped, a little two-wheeled bicycle with a motor on it. Don't listen to Pastor Danielle. He doesn't have a brand new pickup truck like you do. We'll just take your pickup truck and we'll go anyway, and it'll be just fine. Well, I was a little bit concerned because I paid $26,000 for that two-wheel drive Mitsubishi pickup truck, and I wasn't real happy about taking it out and taking it into risk. But all I could think about was Pastor Danielle telling me, whatever she says, don't go. Whatever, if it rains, don't go. And she wouldn't listen to me. And so we loaded up into the pickup truck, and this other guy got in the pickup truck, and Jane got in, and I got in, and we're driving up the road. And I realized that, where's my wife going to sit? So I asked Jane if the guy, could ride in the back seat, in the back, inside the top of that made out of plywood. Well, she said, no, Mike, he's the guy. He needs to ride in the front to show us the way. I don't know where I got the courage, but I said to Jane, well, Jane, would you mind sitting in the back? And she said, Mike, she said, he doesn't know the way that well. I have to help. I said, well, Jane, if the guy doesn't know the way that well, I'm right in the back and you can show me the way. And then she let me know, Mike, I don't know the way that well either. Both of us will get you there. And I thought, oh boy, great. I'm going to the village I'm not supposed to go to if two people don't know the way. But obedience isn't always easy, but it's always wise. So I pulled into the 512 Fair and told Sue, I said, well, we're going to go anyway, but you're going to have to ride in the back. She said, no problem, Mike. She said, I'll just put my aluminum folding chair back there. You got that nice plywood in the back on the floor. I'll set my chair there, and I'll just ride in the back. And John can sit on one of the wooden benches that he made around the back. And so we took off down the road, and after we got about 5 miles down the road, Jane says, here, you pull off right here. And I looked and I said, here, where? There's no road. She said, oh, no, it's here. Just pull down. So I started to pull down off the road, and I said, Jane, you're absolutely lost already. There's no road here. There's no road. She said, just listen to me. Pull down there and drive. And so we pulled down, and there's kind of a creek down there. She said, this is the way. This is the way. Go in there. And I started to pull down into the road, and all of a sudden she screams at me, stop, where are you going? I said, well, there's no way to pull down this way. And she said, listen to the guy. Well, I said, the guy didn't say anything. She said, you got to wash his hand. I said, what do you mean, wash his hand? She said, he points the way to go. You don't see the tree stump there in the road. And I looked down, sure enough, he had his hand going like that. I should have went left. So here he is going left, right. And here's Sue in the back of the pickup truck in her folding chair sliding. I go right, she goes left, I go left, she goes right. And I'm looking at her in the rearview mirror thinking, it's too difficult to live here in Africa. This is ridiculous. Got my wife sliding around in the back of my pickup truck while two guys that don't know where they're going are telling me how to get to a church that Pastor Danielle told me not to go to. It just can't be worth it. And my arms are about ready to fall off. And I said, Jane, I can't steer. I don't have power steering. And Jane says, you wimp. She says, I do this all the time in my Toyota Corolla. And I said, Jane, I wish we were in your Toyota Corolla. And I'm thinking about my pickup truck dragging through the water. Remember what Sue said about obedience not always being easy, but always being wise. As I reflect back to our first 4 years in Donovan, where we planted a church for Muslim people, our first convert there, his name was Troy. And Troy was like 70 years old when he came to the Lord. And Troy, he must have sore arms. Troy spent one whole year of his life chained up in a closet because he was possessed with evil spirits. His family locked him up in there so he wouldn't hurt anybody. And you notice on his face, one side a little bit sad, I think he probably had a stroke. And maybe he had evil spirits too. But Troy was the first guy in Dalwa to put his faith in Jesus Christ. And if I wasn't in Dalwa, if I didn't spend that time in Mali, I wouldn't have learned Jula to train people to reach Troy with the gospel. And by me, I wouldn't have gone to Troy's house and led him to Christ if I wasn't there in Mali. Well, the winds and the sea obey Jesus, so I need to obey him. But even the evil spirits obey Jesus. Remember when Jesus cast evil spirits out of the people that were possessed? And the people were amazed, and they said, even the unclean spirits obey Jesus. Well, if the unclean spirits can obey Jesus, what about missionary mine? Well, I guess I should obey Jesus as well. With my sore arms, I continued down the road, thinking that, well, obedience isn't always easy, but it's always wise. And here I am driving that pickup truck down the road. And you know, we were only going 35 miles, and it had already been over an hour and a half. It was going on 2 hours. Finally, after 2 hours, we came to a place where the road was kind of washed out. The creek evidently had left the road and washed the water out to the side. And here where the road was, it had made a cut in the road. And I stopped and I said, Jane, I can't go any farther. Look, I said, this isn't a four-wheel drive pickup truck. I can't get over that. And she said, Mike, she said, I do this all the time. I said, yeah, right, in your Toyota Corolla. She said, yeah, I do. I said, oh, come on, Jane, this is too much. How do you expect a missionary to live like this? And she says, Mike, you first-term missionaries, you are really weaklings. And I said, Jane, I said, really, I can't get over that cut. And she said, sure you can. She said, back up, put it in first and second, just go as fast as you can over that, and you'll make it. I said, Jane, I'm looking at my wife in the rearview mirror the whole time in a folding chair. And she says, no, Mike, you got to do it. We can't turn around and go back. So I backed up, and I put it in first gear, and whoa, second gear, whoa, bam, we made it over. And I looked in the rearview mirror and saw the preacher's face, and she wasn't too happy. And I'm thinking, driving is too difficult here in Africa. And I rolled down the window, and I said, Sue, are you all right? She said, yeah, I'm okay. And John says, do it again, Dad. And I'm thinking, I should be living in Omaha with a three-car garage. I was in the pre-law program at Creighton University before God called me to be a missionary. And I should have some nice cars in that three-car garage, like maybe a Miata. A Miata would be a lot nicer than this pickup truck, or maybe a BMW and an SUV. I shouldn't be driving this pickup truck down these roads in Mali. Well, my wife is right. Obedience isn't always easy, but it's always wise. And so I continued on and drove on that horrible road. We now are over 2 hours driving up this creek, and my arms are, I don't know how I continue to drive. But finally, after about 3 hours, a little more than 3 hours, we arrived at the village. And it was a great arrival. It was so exciting as we pulled into the village. There was kind of a pond there where the rain had filled up in the middle of the village, and there were some ducks there in the pond. And I looked around and saw some of the mud huts that the people lived in and what poverty they lived in. And the pastor and his wife were so excited when they saw us pull in. They were waiting for us, and they ran out of their house and they greeted us and gave us a big hug and said, oh, thanks for coming, missionary. Thanks for coming. We've never had a missionary visit us in this village before. And I'm looking around the village thinking, well, maybe there's a reason, you know. There are not too many huts here in this village. And as I'm looking around, I'm thinking, not much of a village. Where are the people going to come from? And then they took us over and showed us the church. And the church was not this building, but one that looked pretty much like it, a mud hut building. And the pastor's wife walked in, and the pastor's daughter walked into the church. And the pastor went out, and he started blowing this horn, woo, woo, to bring people into church. And I thought, well, maybe there'll be a lot of people. Maybe not like Christ Community, but there'll be a lot of people. And they'll come from all the villages. As I'm sitting there waiting in this rickety chair leaning against the wall of the church, the pastor comes in and sits down. And then finally a couple men drift in, and a couple women drift into the church. And I'm sitting there thinking about the big crowd that came. And you know, coming from a big church, we count the crowd. You know, you want to know how you're doing from one week to the next. Are there more people there or less people there? And I'm counting the crowd. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. I can count them over and over again many times in a minute. And it's not growing. No more people are coming. And
I'm starting to have this pity party, like, God, how could it be worth it to leave our church in Omaha, to leave our family, to leave our friends? How can it be worth it to give all that up and to be here in Mali? And God, He knew what I needed. He knew my weaknesses. And He sent a direct sign to me like I've never received before. As I was sitting there pouting directly above my head, because of the rains the night before, a termite nest let loose from the roof and hit me right on the head. Splashed on the ground. I don't know that much about termites, but I understand they have like, this kind have like 60 seconds to get out of the air into shelter so they don't dry up. So they're looking for a place to live inside my head. They're running up my pants and I'm smashing them and brushing them off my head and I'm thinking, it just ain't worth it. Living with termites in my head, crawling up my legs, it can't be worth it. You're right, God, it ain't right. It ain't worth it. It's too difficult to preach here in Africa. It's too difficult to live here in Africa. And I want tickets to go back home. And then the Holy Spirit started to show me how difficult it was for Jesus. Jesus just didn't give up Omaha. He gave up heaven. He gave up the glory of heaven. And God so loved the world that He didn't just send His Son from Omaha, but He sent His Son from glory to be nailed on a cross. And here I was having a pity party in this little church in Mali. Obedience wasn't easy for Jesus, and it wasn't easy for me, and it's not easy for you. But it's always wise. God is asking you to pray. God is asking you to give. He's asking you to go. He's asking you to send. If you're in, you'll do those four things. He who has my commandments and keeps them, Jesus said, he it is who loves me. As I finished my message in that church that morning, the rain started to come again. And we walked out of the church and they showed us the chicken that they were going to prepare for lunch. It was still alive. And we're sitting there in the shelter waiting and waiting and waiting. They couldn't get the fire started because the rain got the wood wet. And finally around 5 o'clock, they brought us supper, and I said, Jane, how are we ever going to drive out of here? We only got one more hour of daylight. It took 3 hours to get here without rain. Now it's raining. How am I ever going to get out of here? And Jane says to me, Mike, you're such a worrywart. We'll take the paved road. I said, if I had a gun, I could do my first funeral in Africa. What do you mean, the paved road? Well, Jane set me straight a couple years ago. She found out I was preaching about her. And she said, Mike, I didn't know the road was there. They told me while we were there that there was a new road and we could take the paved road. And we were home before 6 o'clock, before sunset. And I was glad, you know, to be back home. And I want to just make this one point clear this morning, that obedience isn't always easy, whether it's praying, giving, going, or sending, but it's always wise. If you're in, you need to obey Jesus. But why? Why do we obey Jesus? Just, are we going to force ourselves? No, because we love Him. But what does Jesus ask us to do? You know, the Great Commission. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations. How do we do that? By praying, by giving. Why do we go? We go because everybody needs Jesus. He who has the Son has the life. He who is not the Son has not the life. This is a life or death issue. Our friendly neighbors that we've known for so long, if they don't know Christ, they're going to a Christless eternity in hell. Muslims in Mali, in Iraq, in Cote d'Ivoire, in Lebanon, who don't know Jesus, will go to an eternity in hell. Buddhists who don't know Jesus will go to an eternity in hell if they don't know Jesus. So our responsibility is to share Christ with them. If we don't, they will face a Christless eternity in hell. We go because everybody needs Jesus. The theme of our mission conference is getting it done. Are you in? And that's my question for you. Sue and I, we're in. We've given up Omaha, we've given up our family and friends, but here in Wahoo is Wahoo Alliance Church. not the building, the people, in. If you are, you can pray. We need you to pray to be part of our team. To help you do that, we have our website. You can go to our website, www.faro.net, or if you want to go straight to the prayer pages, go to pray.faro.net, and you can learn more how to pray for us. We have our sign-up back here. We want you to sign up and receive our weekly prayer updates. We send them out on Tuesday, a real short paragraph, how you can pray for us. If you're in, you need to pray, and we need you praying for us. We also need you to give. That's why we have our faith promise card, so we know a little bit what your faith promise is. And maybe you've never done a faith promise before. Try it. Do it the first time. Stretch your faith. Maybe it'll be a little amount. Maybe you're going to say, this first time, I'm going to say $10 a month. Or maybe you're already giving $100 a month, or $500 a month, or $1,000 a month. Stretch your faith. See how much you can increase that by. If you want more information about supporting your Alliance missionaries, just go to give.faro.net, and I explain how the giving works for the Christian Missionary Alliance. We also need you to go. You can go no matter what age you are. You can go with the Christian Missionary Alliance now, whether you're 30 years old or 60 years old. You can go short term, 2 weeks, a week, maybe for a career like Sue and I. Maybe you're only going to go for 2 years. Maybe you're going to work as a bookkeeper or something on one of our fields as a bookkeeper. Maybe you're going to go and teach English. Maybe you're going to come to Cote d'Ivoire and pray with us as we go around, visit Lebanese people. Go with me and pray for them and know them by name and pray for them when you come home. Go to go.farho.net if you want more information about how to go. That will take you to the Alliance website. I have some cards for the website on my display table, and that will explain to you how you can go for 2 weeks or for a career with the Christian Missionary Alliance. We also need you to send. What does send mean? Send means identifying the people here in Wahoo Alliance Church that God's called to be missionaries, whether short-term or long-term, and supporting them, encouraging them, not just financially, but with your words, enabling them, helping them to have their ministry right here in Wahoo before they go, helping them to have a ministry at the university or at Bible college, helping them to go by sending them. Maybe it means helping them with their outfit. Maybe it means helping out the Albrights or the Farhos with our outfit expenses. But you need to be sending missionaries also. So we're with you together, praying, giving, going, and sending. We're a team. We have to work together, and we can work together, and we're grateful to be here as part of the team with Wahoo Community Church.